Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we're joined by the world-famous Spencer Howard. How are you, Spencer? And welcome to the pod.
Yeah, I'm doing well, Trevor. How are you?
Just living the dream.
Tom, good to see you as always.
Oh, it's great to have you, Spencer. It's been too long. I feel like I haven't talked to you in a while.
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
See, we had to convince you to come on the pod just so we could actually catch up about life.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're always traveling. It's hard to keep up.
You know, the thing that boggles my mind is the fact that I have not run into you, or Tom hasn't run into you overseas.
Have we not? I thought we ran into each other at like Oktoberfest once, Trevor.
That was planned. Remember Jeff Brownson had like a Facebook group and we were all coordinating. I mean, it wasn't like I just happened to walk into, you know, one of the beer tents and suddenly I see you and you standing on one of the tables. And, you know, I mean, that would be, don't get me wrong, you're tall enough that I could probably pick you out in a crowd. But, I Oktoberfest, I feel like you've got to coordinate to be able to run into people.
Yeah, for sure.
I think organic meetups, you know, internationally is kind of par for the course, or table stakes or something.
Yeah, it happens eventually.
It does. I mean, I've run into a bunch of people overseas. Every time I travel with my brother, I run into somebody overseas for some reason. He thinks I know everybody.
Maybe he's telling everybody that you're traveling.
Touche. Well, we started out talking a little bit about Europe. I think we wanted to actually talk mostly about your Asia Pacific experience. You did a pretty extensive, 4 to 6 weeks?
Yeah, it was about 6 weeks.
Down under?
Yeah, it was New Zealand, a few days in Sydney, and then Japan.
I'm really excited to hear about it. We haven't actually been able to trade messages on this. I've kind of intentionally not asked you. So I'm hearing it all for the first time. Tom's hearing it all for the first time. I think that adds a little bit of fun to the podcast.
I might have seen some Instagram posts somewhere, but that's about it.
Yep, that's how you have to keep up with what I'm doing. Otherwise, did it even happen?
Well, if it's not on the gram, it didn't happen, right?
I always lose track eventually, like a couple weeks in, I'm like, I'm too tired. I'm not posting right now. And then I forget.
So not only was this a 6 week trip for you, it was your new dad, and this was your daughter's first trip overseas, right?
Yep, that's right.
So let's try to kind of tackle this in a couple of different ways, kind of two threads as we go. First, you know, let's talk through how you booked it and how you prepared to travel for an extended period with a fairly newborn, right? You know, under 1 year old.
Four and a half months.
Yeah, I think you beat me on the first international trip. I think we were 7 months. So bravo, sir. Bravo, yeah. Sir.
I don't know if it's a bravo, more of a like, are you nuts?
No, they're easy at that age. They totally are. Or at least ours was easy.
You probably don't need to convince too many people in this community, you know. I think you've as crazy as it is, I think most of the people would be like, "Oh, makes perfect sense."
Yeah, exactly.
They're not mobile yet. It's so much easier when they're not mobile. Yeah, so we'll talk kind of the prep and how you adapted from being the consummate traveler as solo or as a couple to as a family. And then we'll kind of also talk about the destinations, because I too saw the occasional Instagram post. And you went to places I had to go to Google Maps to find.
Yeah, it was a good trip. We tried to do a lot, and there's still so much, obviously, that we didn't do, but it was a ton of fun exploring.
So how did you originally arrive at that itinerary?
Well, New Zealand and Japan were kind of top of my wife's list of places to go. And since she was on maternity leave, we figured let's just deal with the time zone change. Roughly once. I think there's about a 5-hour difference between New Zealand and Japan, but it was more, to us, it was more feasible than trying to like run over to Japan for a week when she could take time off of work. So that's why we ended up combining the two. Yeah, it worked out.
And so you did that. I imagine that the majority of your flights were booked via awards. Were those informed by your own finding for straight to the points award alerts?
You know what? I don't think so. No, not this time. Yeah, I mean, as you know, having traveled with an infant, I was just looking for ways to not have to pay a ton for a small child that wouldn't enjoy the experience. So it was more about just, for me, it was like finding space on Air New Zealand and booking with Virgin Atlantic so that I could spend 5,000 points on a lap infant instead of 10% of the ticket. So yeah, that was the kind of stuff I was focused on.
And that's a huge point. I mean, Virgin Atlantic, British Airways, Aeroplan, they are the superstars for parents of lap infants.
Yeah, it's amazing. And we actually used Aeroplan points to get back, which was fantastic. It's a tiny fee. I mean, you can use points, but you may as well just pay cash because it's so little. But, and in true, I mean, anybody who knows me realizes that I enjoy booking kind of crazy things, but the journey home was actually Melbourne to Singapore to Seoul to Tokyo with a stopover for 2 weeks and then a flight to Toronto and then down to DC. I really put my child through it just so that she could see, like, you know, what I'm all about when it comes to travel.
You're setting the expectation pretty early on.
Exactly. Hey, we want to go fly this airline and then we want to go fly this airline.
I love it. I love it. I found that if I did more than three segments without a meaningful break, it didn't go well for me. It sounds like you guys were pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, 2 weeks in Japan, that was a big break. It was a big break. But yeah, I mean, other than one flight, she was great. But that was one of those flights that was like, oh, it's going to, I guess we were just traveling during when she should have been going to bed. And it was just, I get it. But otherwise, yeah, she did a great job. She was very chill most of the time. All in all, not a bad experience. Would recommend.
So you departed from DC. You're a fellow DC-based traveler. You headed to New Zealand. I think you mentioned offline that you had gone through Houston.
Yeah, we so positioned to Houston and then flew Air New Zealand to Auckland on their. They leased a 777 from Cathay Pacific, so their business class is a bit nicer than their own aircraft. So that's why I booked that one. And then you can also pay.
A good choice.
Yeah, it was great. And you can pay a little bit extra in cash to fly in what are the first class cabin that Cathay operates. Air New Zealand obviously doesn't have a first class, but they will let you buy the bigger seat. And that was worth it too.
Oh, so you were able to get the bigger seat too.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hefty price tag, but it's like relative to what it would have cost. It was fine when I use points anyway. So.
And it was also, what, a 15 or 17 hour flight, right?
Yeah, it's a long one. It's maybe 14, 15, somewhere in that ballpark. Not quite as bad as obviously going to Sydney from Dallas or something. But yeah, it definitely was nice to have the extra space.
Yeah, and it's funny because as you said that, you know, the Cathay Pacific kind of leased aircraft or loaned aircraft. I remember trying to get an award on that aircraft. I think it was on Halloween from Bangkok. We were literally at the pool deck and got an alert, I think maybe from you, maybe from one of the other services. And I'm trying everything I can to get four seats on that flight. I failed. I didn't have success with that. But I do remember that uniqueness of the Cathay Pacific aircraft versus Air New Zealand. So bravo for getting that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Before I flew it, I saw somebody get an aircraft swap like right before they were supposed to fly it. And so they got put on the Air New Zealand's own aircraft, which is the business class is significantly worse. And so I was just like checking daily. As soon as I saw that swap happen to someone, I was like, oh no.
Yeah. How to increase the stress of a trip, you know, magnitudes.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, let's be honest, it still would have been a lie flat seat. It just wouldn't have been as nice.
Yeah. Was the crew staffed by Air New Zealand people or did they like wet lease the crew too? Okay.
Yeah, it's all Air New Zealand. Yeah. So it was great. They were super friendly.
And Air New Zealand livery?
You know what? I don't actually know. We didn't have a view of the aircraft when we were boarding and it was so late.
You just wanted to get on the plane.
I mean, yeah, I was like carrying everything. So it's like, let's just get to the seat.
The struggle is real.
Yeah.
So did they do anything special for your daughter on board?
Not that I can remember. I mean, they were very friendly and they love seeing her. But that was, yeah, nothing.
Sometimes they give stuffies. The Lufthansa flight attendants have like a full little box of toys for different ages.
On one flight, on Singapore Air, we got a, like, it's like some sort of Disney version of the Singapore bear.
Oh, cool. They have a girl and a boy bear on Singapore.
They have chefs too.
Yes, yes. The chef, I think our daughter has like two or three of the chef bears. She's been on a lot of Singapore.
Yeah. As she should.
Of course. Of course. I told her that when she gets older, if she wants, we'll figure out if we can find one of those batik Singapore girl uniforms. She can wear it on a flight.
I don't think you want Singapore to get in trouble for child labor, you know, laws or anything like that.
Oh, of course. Such concerns.
So we live in a pretty litigious society.
Yeah, we do. And they do. So you made it to Auckland. Did you guys stay in Auckland for any period of time?
We jumped down to Queenstown first thing. And yeah, we worked our way back up to Auckland via car, plane, ferry. I think that's about it. I don't think we did a train during that. But yeah, we did a lot of different, we used a lot of modes of transportation to get around New Zealand.
Wow. So had you been to Auckland before?
Yeah, I'd been to Queenstown and Auckland.
Oh, okay. So you knew the vibe that you were going to then?
Yeah, they're very different from each other.
And that was what I was sort of thinking is like, because you're going from like a fairly chill city environment to like really chill, at least from what I hear about Queenstown.
Oh, yeah. Have you not been to Queenstown?
I have not been to South Island, no.
Oh, man, I thought you had. Okay, so yeah, Queenstown obviously has like the whole backpacker scene. I joke that I didn't meet anybody from New Zealand until I left Queenstown because there's so many people. I mean, I honestly think I met more people from France than I did from New Zealand while I was there, and plenty of Americans. But it's such a beautiful place. Just the part of the world is just so beautiful. And if you're into the backpacker scene, you've got hostels. It's not really what we were going for, but they also have wineries and you can go to Milford Sound and just take walks and enjoy the natural beauty. I mean, it's a really cool place. I'd go back again.
So I want to take just a little bit of a deeper conversation about this part, because I think you raised a really good point, is that down in Queenstown, you've got hostels. I don't think there's a lot of chain hotels. So what was kind of your strategy to find the hotels that you stayed at? And if you want to share any of the names of the hotels that you enjoyed the most.
In Queenstown, just get out your credit card and pay for your hotel.
But something our listeners would absolutely love to hear, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. So there are, I think, one or two SLH properties, which just at no point in my searching had a Ward space when it was with Hyatt. I don't know if that'll change for Hilton, but one of them is like right there in the middle of everything. So if you have Hilton points, I'm sure it'll cost a lot. It's definitely worth looking at. Otherwise, there's a Sofitel. There's St. Moritz. It's another Accor property, like in the Sofitel kind of family. But that's to me, like those are the there's convenient. And then there's the Hilton and Doubletree, which are not convenient if you're just trying to walk around. So that's why I didn't do that. There's also a new Rosewood if anybody wants to go like uber luxury. It's not in the city, but that might be worth it. But yeah, so that's, yeah, we just ended up paying cash for the St. Moritz, and it was walkable enough, very steep hill to and from, like getting to and from the property. But it worked out well for us. We had a suite of some kind, but it was priced fairly, I thought. And so we had enough space with a baby to be able to have a quiet moment.
You know, it is interesting how Accor in that part of the world is strangely a lot stronger than they are almost everywhere else. Because it's like, I feel like Oceania specifically, you know, especially like in places like Sydney, sounds like Queenstown, they seem to have a lot more properties as compared to some of the other, their rivals, you know, that we're more used to from the Western side of the world.
I have some level of Accor status after staying at three of them in New Zealand. It was just the best option in a number of places. So worked out fine.
Yeah, Accor is kind of like a blind spot for me for hotels, but it's probably makes sense not for if you're going to go to Australia or, you know, New Zealand or, you know, some of these other, Singapore, you know, there's probably a couple places in the world that a lot of the points and miles people go frequently where probably behooves people not to keep it a too big a blind spot.
Yeah, I mean Fairmont is part of Accor. I think in the North America, that might be the best known one. You also have Raffles, since you mentioned Singapore. Yeah, so there's definitely some nice options. And yeah, I mean, if you have to pay cash, that's what it is. And you can use the points are really easy to use because it's just it's a revenue based system. I think it's like one.
Yep. Kind of fixed rate, right? Which makes it not sexy, which is why it's such a blind spot to so many points and miles people. It's like, there's no gaming, right? It is what it is. It's like the Southwest points of hotels.
Yeah. And I mean, that's fine. Whatever. It is what it is. You can use it as an opportunity to earn points or redeem points, whatever. I mean, because Capital One transfers to Accor, or I guess you could just cash out, or you could use some bank portal. But yeah, I think there's certainly times when it...
I think Thank You does too, right? I think. Okay. We're going to have to do some on-the-fly producing here or something.
Clearly, I don't transfer to Accor. But yeah, I think that it was a great brand to think about when in New Zealand.
So Spencer, you're a travel hacker. We're all travel hackers here. I have to ask, you didn't just pay cash. There had to have been another angle that you took to book this. Do they not participate in any of those larger programs, Privé, well, not Privé, but Virtuoso or any?
So St. Moritz doesn't, Sofitel does. So like later in the trip, I stayed at the Sofitel in Wellington and I booked that through a course step program. So get the daily breakfast, $100 property credit, upgrade, stuff like that. So yeah.
I'm just a little bit stunned that St. Moritz must have been an incredible hotel to book without having any travel hacking angle at all. I believe it. But it's just stunning.
Yeah, it was more just a function of by the time we'd finalized like where we were going to be and when, that there was just so little available. I did have something at the Hilton book that was better, but like price-wise, but it was like, nah, I'm going for convenience. Convenience matters, I think, when you're traveling with a little one, or even if you're not. It's just whatever you're into. Yeah, having a baby, I wasn't ready to take a hike just to get to the city.
As I get older, I totally go for the convenience and the luxury. You know, it's a little bit of lifestyle inflation, I suppose.
Sometimes you do have to pay for the experience that you want, right? You know, I think that that's probably a good, you know, a good point of thumb. I mean, you know, sometimes we try so hard to squeeze these square pegs into round holes because we are travel hackers. But, you know, sometimes, you know, it is just better just to get out your credit card and pay for what you're going to get, especially when that experience is going to be that much head and shoulders above other options, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is something that, I mean, this will be a little tangent for us, but Trevor, you mentioned lifestyle inflation. I mean, I remember hearing people talk about that so much when I first got into points, and I still hear it some, but it's like, do you really want to live the same way you lived with your first job? Or if you've progressed and you're fortunate enough to be able to like not live that way, like it's not a bad thing, like live within your means and all that, but it's, the point of traveling isn't just to like tell somebody that you use points to travel. It's about to go have the experience you want.
But you're not maximizing.
I'm maximizing my experience, Tom.
There you go. That's what you're doing.
So let's pull that thread a little bit more, the experience part. So you pretty much traversed the majority of New Zealand. What were some of the high points?
Lake Tekapo was amazing for me. So it's a dark sky reserve. It's a small city.
What's a dark sky reserve?
Yeah, exactly. They have telescopes and I'm not even sure the technical term. They have astronomers studying the universe, basically, from atop a mountain. And they have built the city in a way that like there isn't a lot of light pollution. So you can see tons of stars. Like even the streetlights are all like, I think they're like an orange hue instead of blue because that is less, it causes less light pollution. And I was fortunate to go on a night that was quite clear so we could see a lot. That was really cool. It's definitely out of the way. You don't need a ton of time in Lake Tekapo, but going and seeing that was really cool for me.
That sounds incredible. Kona, Hawaii is another one because they have the Keck Observatory on Mauna Kea.
Okay, that's cool. I should do that someday.
I went up there once and I saw this one object. I thought it was a light, or my wife thought it was a light street lamp, and it turns out it was Jupiter. She'll probably not be happy that I've shared that on the pod, but
I get those mixed up all the time in DC.
It's just so easy.
Is that Jupiter or a street lamp? No.
I mean, when a planet looks the size of a street lamp that's like 50 feet away, that's a pretty nice view of Jupiter.
It's a very clear sky.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Any other high points that you'd like to share with?
You know what? We actually flew from Christchurch to Nelson, which is out near the like Abel Tasman National Park. We just got an Airbnb for a couple nights up there and it was such a like calm, scenic place. And the Airbnb was fantastic. Like I shared a photo of it on Instagram and then people asked me for the link to it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to help this person book out their Airbnb. But it is truly it was just a very relaxing place to just kind of chill. You didn't need to go do a ton of things. You could just kind of take it in, which is nice when you're traveling for so long to just take a minute and not try to like run around to everything all the time.
You do need those days of like kind of planned inactivity. It's because, you know, if you don't do that, I mean, you're just going to burn yourself out and you're not going to really appreciate what you're doing.
Absolutely. And I say that as someone who is typically running around like crazy and my friends who travel with me are always like, just chill. but it was definitely useful throughout the trip to just take a minute.
You'll find that you'll slow down just at least just a little when you're traveling with your daughter in tow. That's my observation, at least.
Yeah, there's just, you've got to consider other, you have to consider other people now. People who are dependent entirely upon you.
Any final thoughts on New Zealand before we pivot to your next country?
Yeah, don't skip the North Island. There's definitely more. I went to Wellington and Auckland, but there's so much more to see up there. I just think sometimes the South Island gets all the praise, and don't get me wrong, it is gorgeous, and I would spend more time exploring there. But I think sometimes it's just Auckland and Wellington, they just kind of get breezed past, or people don't even stop by. So I at least like to see places and, you know, give them a chance, see what they have to offer. Yeah.
I think that's good advice. And I had a question about New Zealand. Like when I was there, you know, and it's been a while, it's been, I forget how many years it's been, but I felt like the hotel market there was kind of underdeveloped. Like there just is not enough considering the amount of tourists and whatever. Is this still the case now, or has it gotten any better, or has it gotten worse?
There's a lot of like local things, which makes it, I mean, so local that you can't find any kind of really good reviews on stuff. So you kind of have to hope for the best. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely options in the cities. Auckland has a Park Hyatt. It has a Sofitel. It has an Intercontinental. Like, it's a big city, relatively speaking. Wellington has a Sofitel and some other thing. I don't remember the other ones, but that stood out. It's not the same as going to like London or Paris or New York.
Right. Where it's peppered with any number of Hiltons and Marriotts and other things.
I mean, it's like every brand wants to be there. Or if you think about like Tokyo, where like Four Seasons has two properties that are not right around the corner from each other, but very close to each other. I mean, there's cities like that. You don't really see that in New Zealand. There are some really nice properties outside of cities. They are very pricey. And like, there's a reason for that. Like there's three Rosewood properties that stand out, and they all look amazing. That wasn't quite what we were going for on this trip.
Got it. Thanks for the update.
So from New Zealand, you said you went to Sydney?
Yeah, Sydney for 3 days before heading up to Japan. I feel like part of the reason I went to Sydney is because I wanted to stay at the Capella Sydney. It's a newer hotel.
It's in a restored historic building, right?
Yeah, it was at one point, I think it was the Department of Education and the Department of Agriculture. I don't know if that overlapped, but yeah, it's a beautiful building in the city center. The former GM of the Park Hyatt Sydney is the GM there now. The staff is just so friendly and helpful. I'd heard all these things and I just wanted to go see it, but it truly is it's truly an amazing hotel that I would prefer to stay in when I go back.
I think I looked at it when I did my last trip to Sydney, and I think I watched a whole video about them remodeling the building and all the craziness around that. And I've never actually stayed at a Capella hotel. It feels like a relatively new brand, or it's definitely one I've heard of. I know there's one in DC, right?
There used to be. It's now a Rosewood.
Oh, they change it. Oh.
There's one in Bangkok. There's one in Hanoi. There's one in Singapore. I'm forgetting things. There's one that's planned for Kyoto, I believe. Yeah. It's a super nice chain. It's
another one of these kind of boutique, ultra-luxury brand, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's... And the thing is, I would say the Sydney property especially is like, actually, yeah, it's very reasonably priced relative to like what you're getting.
Is it an FHR hotel? I'm trying to remember.
I'm sure it is. I'm guessing it's probably on there.
I'm thinking it is, because that's probably why it was on my list to look at.
I booked myself through Virtuoso, so I'm guessing it's probably on FHR. But yeah, it's such a great hotel. And I'm just telling people it's better than the Park Hyatt just to see if I can upset some points people.
Ooh, wow. You know, it's funny. I'm, as much as I love the Park Hyatt, I'm kind of tired of the Park Hyatt.
I mean, look, I've stayed twice and visited somebody who was staying there once. And all three times, the staff seemed less than enthused, we'll go with. So it's just, okay. I feel like I've given it a fair shot. The breakfast is great.
Yeah, it is great. It is great. But it's been like kind of the top dog top dog hotel there for such a long time. You know, it's like they're kind of resting on their laurels a little bit. They always seem to be priced, you know, very high, you know, for what it is.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. And I think the Capella is really bringing competition. The Langham is supposed to be really nice as well. I think it's still kind of, I mean, depends on your dates, but you can get what I would say are reasonably priced nice hotels in Sydney if you're not using points. There's obviously plenty of points options, but if you want a luxury experience, but you don't necessarily want to stay at the Park Hyatt, there are options.
Well, folks, you've heard it here. Shots fired. Shots fired at the Park Hyatt, Sydney.
I'm just asking them to live up to their name.
I mean, if you've never stayed, I mean, definitely do make a stay. Just maybe after the third or fourth time, go try somewhere else.
It's definitely worth it. If you can get an upgrade, which can be tough, it's even better. Obviously, if you can get those Opera House views, like, yeah, if you want to go like sit on the balcony of your room and enjoy the views, have a glass of wine, like, I'm not going to knock that. That's a great experience.
Hang out in the hot tub and watch the people climb the Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Harbour Bridge.
Yep.
Yeah. Maybe have breakfast and see His Excellency Akbar al-Baker walking in his Qatar PJs.
He's not at the Excellency anymore.
That's true. Okay, fine. You can't do that, but it sounded like fun.
Can't see One World Airline CEOs, you know, having breakfast next to you. So, but anyway, that's different.
Yeah, one reminisces. So, any major things? Did you make it out to Manly? Did you do anything interesting in Sydney for your 3 days there?
This is a more relaxed stop, kind of in between the two, because it was 3 weeks in New Zealand and 2 weeks in Japan. So this is more of a breather. Did walk around the botanical gardens. I think that's always fun.
I got lost in those botanical gardens. I couldn't be like, how do I get out?
That'll happen. Yeah, this time it was really just like enjoy the botanical gardens, walked around, had some good meals, met up with my friend Andy Luton, for those who know Andy's travel blog on Boarding Area. He lives there, so it was just got to hang out with him for his...
Oh, I didn't realize that he was an Aussie.
Well, he's not, but he's a Texan, but he lives in Sydney.
Okay, easy.
His commute photos make me jealous every single day.
As he's going across the harbor.
Oh, yeah, because I think he lives in Manly. And so he does that Manly ferry past the Opera House and in the harbor every single, it seems like regularly that he's sharing a photo.
It's a good view.
Yeah. And with a commute like that, I feel like I could deal with having a slightly longer commute.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So flying from Sydney up to Tokyo, how do you get it? How do you do it?
So, yeah, that's the Aeroplan booking with the stopover. Because I'm me, and I guess my wife is, I don't know, I guess she loves me. She was willing to do a positioning flight to Melbourne and then fly to Singapore on Singapore Air. And then from there to Seoul on Singapore Air and then ASEANA to Tokyo. That took a while. But hey, it was fun for me.
So there's a lot to unpack there, but may I just give you kudos, sir, for saying Melbourne correctly?
Oh, drink time.
kudos.
Drink time. Is this a Trevor thing?
This is a Trevor thing. Did you not realize this? This is the drinking game that we play here on Travel Stories.
My glass of water. No.
Yes. Well, it's my glass of Diet Coke here, but you know, still. Trevor's in the right mood here.
Trevor's actually saying it just so he can have a drink.
That's right.
Well, you said it first. I was complimenting you. But that is the drinking word. It used to be Lufthansa First Class. And when Joe Chung...
Oh, that, now that tracks.
I know.
Joe's probably still drunk.
Yeah, I know. People are getting drunk every episode. So we had to go to something a little bit more challenging.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but what a... Yeah. So the flights, wonderful flights. I have to say the Singapore Airlines crew were just amazing with our daughter. One of them was previously like a preschool or a kindergarten teacher. So she was offering to help if we needed anything. I mean, they were super nice. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting way to get to Japan. But that's what award space is like between Australia and Japan during cherry blossom season.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And, you know, it allowed me to book a stopover, take advantage of, I think it was a Chase transfer bonus to Aeroplan. Like, it all worked out well.
So was that full itinerary, how you got back to North America, or was it just to get to Tokyo?
Oh, no, that there was a 2 week stopover in Tokyo before getting an Air Canada flight to Toronto. Yeah, so we had the flight to Toronto, but we had to overnight and then take like United Economy to Dulles. And our, I want to say, second night in Tokyo, I'd been checking award space and a connection that the night we landed in Toronto opened up on Air Canada to Reagan National instead of Washington Dulles. And so I called in and paid, you know, 100 something Canadian to like change the flight. And I was like, absolutely worth not having to overnight in a hotel in Toronto and to get to the airport that's much closer to my house.
So that's an interesting one. Yeah, I've never had to change an Aeroplan flight, you know, mid-flight. Is that not a hard thing, or did you spend a lot of time on the phone with them? I've had other airlines that have been really problematic in trying to change things once I started the itinerary.
Yeah.
Once a segment was consumed, is that what it was?
Yeah, yeah. But Aeroplan, not a problem. You can pivot pretty easily.
I'd never done it myself, but that was a first. But yeah, we'd done the first leg, and then it was during the stopover where I called. And the hardest part with Aeroplan is getting them on the phone. Sometimes they offer to give you a call back, which is what they did, mercifully. Sometimes they don't. I mean, you sit on the phone, just on hold for a while. But yeah, they gave me a call back and took care of it. And we were pretty good to go. Oh, they actually, no, you know what they did do is they called me back again because apparently they forgot to take the fee for the lap infant for the change. And so they called back to get $1 Canadian from me. I had to put in my credit card again for that. I was like, guys, I don't think this was worth your time of all things. I feel like that $1 did not pay for the time it took one of your employees to call me back and deal with the whole thing. just eat the $1 Canadian.
It only cost us $10 to get this $1 Canadian.
Great investment.
Yeah. So talk us through your Japan stay. You started out in Tokyo?
Started in Tokyo, Grand Hyatt. Very nice property, great for families, and can be more reasonably priced and have points availability when others don't. If you're a Park Hyatt fan, the Park Hyatt in Tokyo will be closed for the next like 18 months while they completely redo it. So that's not going to be an option. So keep that in mind.
I did see the walkthrough you had of the, what is it, the presidential suite.
Oh, yeah. I did a tour of the presidential suite at the Grand Hyatt, which is crazy. I'm calling it a 1 minute room because it took me 1 minute to walk from one end to the other.
So it was just a tour. You didn't somehow land that upgrade.
No. Yeah, that was just, I'd had a meeting with one of the team at the property there, and the hotel was fully booked, and that was the only room that wasn't available or wasn't booked. And so he was like, I'd love to show you some more rooms, but people are in every single one of them, but I can show you the presidential suite. And I was like, absolutely, let's do that. So, it's not a 1 minute room. It's a minute suite, kind of like those things in airports, minute suites, but a very different version.
I'd like to see one of those. It takes a minute to walk from one end to the other.
But yeah, that was a very nice property, good location. We are really lucky. We got to see a ton of cherry blossoms. You may have seen the videos during what they expected was going to be the peak time to see them, when all the trees were bare and everybody was like, I spent X thousands of dollars for a trip to Japan and there are no cherry blossoms. And then we just kind of rocked up there, like knowing that we weren't going to see cherry blossoms. And it was like, bam, right there, full bloom. So I was like, oops, sorry for all of you that were planning on this, but that's how it goes. But it was great. It was beautiful. I mean, I understand why people like going to visit and see them. It's a beautiful time of year to go. So it definitely made sense to me getting to see them in person.
Yeah, not oppressively hot, right?
No, it's not bad at all. I'd been in August, September before, and it's toasty.
It's toasty, yeah.
But I do like that it's when it's baseball season, because baseball games there are fantastic.
Did you take some in while you were there?
Not this time, no, but it is one of my favorite experiences that I've had while traveling. So highly recommend.
I've yet to do it. I've done it in Korea. Fortunately, my cousin was able to take us to the baseball game one time, but haven't done it in Japan yet.
Yeah, I haven't been to Korea during baseball season, so I will have to do that as well.
Yeah, it is definitely a different dynamic and mood. You know, it's a different experience. I would say a little bit more energy than at least the Korean version than the U.S. kind. More stuff happening, I think.
Yeah. The game I went to in Japan, you had bands leading cheers for each team. The team that's up to bat is the only side that cheers. It's like they're the ones making noise. They have like a set cheer for every player. It was so cool. I would absolutely go many, many times.
I mean, they love jingles for everything, right? Even subway stations and everything, right? Everything has to have their own mascot or their own jingle or their own, you know, melody or something, right?
Yeah, the town mascots. I love those. Those are so fun.
Those are great.
As a guy who's not the biggest sports fan, I'm listening to this and I'm more intrigued because I was not tracking how unique. I knew that Korea was unique. I knew that Japan had a pretty vibrant baseball interest. I didn't realize some of these unique things. So it's definitely something on the list.
Even if you're not a baseball fan, go. Also, you get to, like, in a sense, get ballpark food, but it's not like hot dogs and peanuts. Like, it'll be something. There's beer. There's still beer. Don't worry.
Yeah. In Korea, my cousin explained, like, you know, it's this particular, you should go get fried chicken. That was what we should get. People are very much bringing food in, you know, from outside, which is allowed, which is, you know, again, very strange, I would imagine, for us Americans. And I'm not really that big a baseball fan, but I enjoyed myself at the Korean game that I went to. So I would definitely be open to doing one in Japan as well.
One of the things that really stood out to me about the Japanese kind of fan experience was there were women who would walk around with backpacks that were basically beer kegs, and they could like pour you a beer from that. But they didn't like yell out to like let people know to get their attention. They would just walk down to the front of a section and raise their hand, kind of indicating to you, if you would like a beer, raise your hand. And they would just walk up to you, pour the beer into a cup, you pay them, go on your, and it was like, wow, it's such a different, I'm used to people like yelling Cracker Jacks and peanuts and beer here. And it was just so interesting.
Seems a lot more polite and what is efficient.
You know, it worked well. The overall experience was, I think, probably more fun for most people, especially those who are not as obsessed with baseball as I am. Anyway, that wasn't this trip. Still totally worth it, because I went like 6 years ago and I'm still talking about it.
So you stayed at the Grand Hyatt in Tokyo. Anywhere else in Tokyo or any other cities in Japan?
Next, we went to Kanazawa, which is west. Yes, west. Famous for gold leaf. And if you like, you'll see gold leaf on temples and shrines in Kyoto. You'll see gold leaf from Kanazawa. They have a new Hyatt Centric, which is probably the nicest hotel. It's also super convenient because it's right by the train station. Kanazawa was great. Had a great walking tour. And what was it we found? I think I was just Googling, looking for places to eat, and found a ramen place that seemed to be well regarded, and showed up and there was a line outside, and I was like, okay, all right, cool. Small place. It was so good. They do it's a miso ramen. So it's like a slightly different take than I guess a lot of places do, but it was so good. I went back a second time.
Oh, wow.
Even with the line.
Yeah. Yeah. The line was it shorter the second time? I think so. But anyway, yeah, it was great. Loved it. But yeah, after that, went to Kyoto, stayed at the Hyatt Regency, which was more than enough. I know the Park Hyatt's like all the Hyatt fan rage, understandably, but there was no award space and rooms were like $2,000 a night. And I was like, I don't feel like it.
Yeah. Resources better deployed elsewhere, it sounds like.
Yeah. In this case, absolutely. I mean, there's also a Ritz-Carlton. I'm not always a huge Ritz-Carlton fan, but I've actually booked clients at the one in Kyoto. It's very nice.
I kind of want to pull at that thread a little bit, because Ritz-Carlton is this enigma to me in the luxury hotel world. So much competition out there in that space. And yet this brand continues. And I just don't get it. I mean, and maybe you have a different perspective, because you actually book clients that want to stay at Ritz-Carlton. I gave them a shot. I tried, like, okay, I'm going to try out this Ritz-Carlton. I'm going to try out this Ritz-Carlton. And I'm like, I just don't get it. I don't understand.
I can appreciate why you would feel that way. So I'll say that we finished up the trip in Nikko. It's a couple hours north of Tokyo. And we stayed at the Ritz-Carlton Nikko. Amazing hotel. Like, truly amazing.
That in spite of it being a Ritz-Carlton, or is it because it's a Ritz-Carlton?
I mean, fair enough. But I also know that if you go to like some Ritz-Carltons, Tyson's Corner in Virginia outside of DC, like I hate to like throw properties under the bus, but I don't understand why it's a Ritz-Carlton. It's a fine hotel for what it is, which is like a business traveler hotel. It's in an office park. I mean, it's right by Capital One's headquarters. Like, there's clearly business travelers in and out of there. Okay, that's fine. I don't know why it's a Ritz-Carlton, though. But the one in like Kyoto or Nikko, I mean, you're noticing a trend that Japan does hotels pretty well.
That's true. That might be a special case. These might be edge cases, the Japanese Ritz-Carltons.
Well, I will say that, and I haven't stayed, but a friend of mine prefers the Ritz-Carlton in Mexico City over the Four Seasons. And the Ritz-Carlton in Melbourne may be the best hotel in that city as well. So there's not one hotel chain that I feel like kind of just nails it in every location they have.
I mean, it's virtually impossible.
You go to one city or one destination and it's like, oh, the Rosewood's the best. You go to the next, it's the Four Seasons. Oh, it's the Aman. Oh, it's the Ritz or whatever. I mean, it's just, yeah, it just depends where you go. And to an extent, it depends what experience you want. And for those av geeks among us, or just I don't know if it's so much av geeks, but like flight nerds, the in-flight experience on like Cathay First versus Singapore Suites or Singapore First, it's very different, but people love both. But some people prefer one much more so than the other. So with like Cathay, you have a much more hands-off experience. They'll be there in a second if you want something, but they're very hands-off. Singapore Air, like they are there constantly. It's one of those things where it's like you finish, I don't know, if you have a glass of champagne and you're like just bringing the glass down from your lips and it's empty and they're like, would you like more? And you're like, wow. And you're just like, where did you come from? Some people hate that. I know people who can't stand it. They want to be left alone. And so they love Cathay. So I think there's a bit of that too with like, what experience are you going for at a hotel? And there's nothing wrong with that.
But, you know, mostly with hotels, they have some brand standards. Like, you know, like St. Regis is, strangely enough, you know, of course, Starwood, but now Marriott. Same company as Ritz-Carlton, right? But at this point, but it just seems like St. Regis is so much better. You know, you're going to get butlers, you know, is kind of their thing. You know, they're going to do champagne sabering in the evenings. You know, they're going to do, you know, everything's like an Astor suite. There's just some things that are much more brand standard across the world in a St. Regis.
There are, but the execution matters. So I think there are St. Regis properties where like, where you have people who will say that like the butler was non-responsive and they didn't do X, Y, and Z and whatever. I mean, that's going to happen even at a really nice hotel brand. So part of it's just, you know, doing your research, talking to people who've been, like, I'm never going to see every hotel. So I lean on friends and colleagues.
That's true. I have yet to find the Ritz-Carlton that I want to, that brings me back. So I think I've been on the journey and I kind of have been on, a sabbatical from Ritz-Carlton. Maybe I need to give them, I need to pick your brain about where I need to go, maybe to rekindle the love.
I think go to the Nikko, Ritz-Carlton Nikko in Japan.
Okay.
I'm not the only person who has had glowing things to say. I know several other people who have been.
I haven't been to Ritz-Carlton in Japan. I've been to Ritz-Carlton's in China, the USA, Spain. Where else have I been to Ritz-Carlton? So maybe that's enough for now.
You're like me with the Park Hyatt in Sydney, and you're like, I have tried. I've given you every opportunity.
Exactly.
So let's pull a little bit of that thread of research and sort of pivot back a little bit to, you know, how you kind of planned out this trip. What are some of the tools you used to research the places that you wanted to go, like, and I'm not going to pronounce that lake.
Lake Tekapo.
Yeah, I wasn't going to get Lake Tekapo terribly well. I think I probably messed it up even just after you said it.
I probably messed it up. I'm telling you the wrong thing. So it's.
But what are your tools? What's your method for researching those sorts of things, trying to figure out?
Is it the inspiration that you're wondering about, Trevor? Like, where does he get inspired, or like, where does he do the actual logistics?
I think the inspiration and then kind of the next level, like whether you're going to try to do a tour or that sort of thing. So the inspiration for a particular destination and then sort of how you plan out your time there.
Yeah. The inspiration was just, I knew the South Island was going to be a big thing because I'd seen Queenstown and I was like, okay, I get this. And so like, there was going to be plenty more to explore. A lot of my research is friends. I think without trying to like throw a bunch of people under the bus, I think as someone who has been blogging or creating content around points and miles and travel for a long time, you don't necessarily have to go do the thing. You can just kind of like talk about it in theory and you can go make your money and do whatever. I like to think that I've been like part of the actual points community for a very long time. And I've know people like you two and, you know, Howie Rappaport, who I think you all know as well. He actually gave me a ton of recommendations for New Zealand because I, like when I was putting stuff together, I was like, oh, Howie's been here at least a few times. He knows this place. Let me ask him. So Howie gave me some great tips. I also posted on my Instagram stories and said, anybody have favorite spots in New Zealand? But a lot of it's like friends. It's just friends. We all travel a ton. We all start to experience things. And just, it's great to, yeah, just great to kind of see what others have done and enjoyed. And then obviously there's an extent to which like, I'm just kind of looking around to see what's out there and maybe that's different. So I think it's going to be hard if you're trying to be original and like do something that no one's ever done. That's going to be tough, but that's not really my mission in life, is to like prove that I did something different.
I like your approach just because you could trust, you know, the source. Because I mean, I feel like when I look on the internet and I look at top 10 things to do or whatever this is, like I can't trust half of those things because these jokers, you know, put stuff up there and don't even, you know, think about it. Or maybe it's AI generated or, you know, they've never even been there. So either that or the people have been there and the reviews are just like, I don't trust what this person's saying.
That makes sense. I will say, so one thing, and I'm pretty passionate about this, finding places to eat, like I'm not necessarily like, oh, I got to go find a Michelin star place or whatever. I just want to find a place that's like people really enjoy. I try to find local food bloggers. I've done this in Taiwan. I've done this in Singapore to see like which hawker center stall I want to try. I've also relied on friends who live there for that. That's cheating, but but like I'll look for local food bloggers.
That's a great tip.
Because they live there and go to more like I can tell you that like, oh, go to X restaurant in whatever city, but I've been to that city for like 3 days. So it may actually be great and I may really have enjoyed it and it may be worth going, but there's going to be so many more options that I'll never see. So it's not that I can't give you good recommendations. It's incomplete. And I think finding local sources is really helpful or people who kind of go back regularly. And yeah, I think if you have been and you're giving people recommendations, like just tell people what you like. You don't have to say it's the best thing ever. Don't feel pressure to like do that. I think sometimes people, if you ever try to give somebody a recommendation online, inevitably is like, that restaurant's terrible. Never go there. And it's just like, okay, but they liked it. Like, let's just chill. Like, this is okay.
Taste is subjective. But you know what? You're pointing out the people who are kind of the experts anyway.
Yeah.
Just from the, what is being part of the locality and having closeness to
their passion.
Yeah. And passion. Yeah. Good point.
The way we're obsessed with booking flights and traveling places, there are people who are just as obsessed with like every restaurant in Tokyo. I mean, that would be next to impossible, but still.
Find the people that are passionate in the niche that you're trying to find the best of the best in. So Spencer, we've been talking for almost an hour. I realized about halfway in, we didn't really give you a chance to sort of introduce yourself to the community.
Just a random person, just talking.
Just as you said, you've been in the community for a long time. I feel like we've known each other for at least a decade. You do a lot for the community. You participate in the community, but you also make some of your livelihood from it. And so I wanted to give you a chance.
My entire livelihood.
That is an amazing accomplishment, by the way.
Yeah, especially through the pandemic and everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. That was special.
So we wanted to give you an opportunity to share the breadth of what you do. I know I'm a straight to the points, I guess, a Word Alerts subscriber, and I love what you do there. But you do so much more. Can you just talk about that a little bit and sort of how some of our listeners might be able to kind of leverage you?
Yeah. Leverage. Yeah, that's what it feels like. People are leveraging me for information.
I mean, yeah. You know, you're better than U.S. Bank, right? You're better than U.S. Bank.
It's a low bar, Trevor. You couldn't say like Amex or something.
Well, I was going with the U.S. Bank leverage card. I was trying to do a little bit of, yeah, inside baseball there.
Oh, man. Trevor's too smart for us over here. No.
I think there's some like dad joke vibes coming from this podcast. Yeah.
Tom's like, I'm uncomfortable. I'm leaving. Oh, man. So yeah, what do I do? Let's try to run through this quickly. So Straight to the Points is my website, straighttothepoints.co. I send award space for business and first class flights on international routes. That is my baby. It's what I've been building since, I guess, August of 2018. Probably comes from like a conversation Trevor and I had, honestly, where I was just like, I just look for award space when I'm writing articles or for award booking clients. I should just share the things I find. I think Trevor was like, yes, do that right now. I need that. Do that.
Multiple times. I think I even told you needed to charge for it.
Yeah. So it's my job, but it's my passion project as well. So there's a free version and a paid version. What else do I do? I'm a luxury travel advisor. So I do hotel bookings, cruises, luxury trains. Yeah, just trying to, I mean, the whole point of it, along with the newsletter, is just helping elevate the experience for people. The way I like to travel is use my points for nice flights. And then when it makes sense, use cash for nice hotels to have just an even better experience on the ground. And then lastly, I've recently started a site called pointswire.com to curate the points in travel news that I think is worth your time paying attention to, where I just share excerpts and links to larger like full articles if you want to read more about a topic. I feel like that's all I do.
That's all. Jeez, I think that's enough.
That's enough.
I will say I find PointsWire popping up, screenshots and links of PointsWire popping up more and more in some of the chats that I'm a part of. So
it's great to hear.
I think you're getting a lot of traction there. And I know it's nice to get a nice bite size quick. We're all going a mile a minute. And I know that that's been helpful.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole goal, is just take everything that you would have to kind of trudge through and just give you a very quick bite, and you can figure out which ones are actually applicable to you. Which, again, I think we've talked about this. People have different tastes. People have different priorities of travel. Like, Southwest means everything to somebody and nothing to someone else. And so it's just a matter of being able to find the...
Points and miles is not a monolith, right?
Yeah. And so finding the information that's important to your travel faster is, I think, it's important. So I'm trying to just, you know, save people some hours.
No, and I definitely think the community appreciates it. I know I do.
Oh, well, thanks.
So Spencer, once again, thank you so much for coming on the pod. We really, really appreciate it. Hope to have you back. You're a font of knowledge and a friend. You know, it's just great to have you on here. I think with that said, we should probably close out the show.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Great conversation. So have you back anytime, hopefully.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member for access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.